Accession number 7310, rail number 3.
Colonel Cleve, tape 3. Can you remember any other incidents, Colonel Cleve, during the late 1915, early 1916, before the Battle of the Somme? Did anything else of interest occur then?
One thing I do remember is, you know, you can imagine how awfully difficult it is for a whole lot of officers and men to get on well together. We got on extremely well in all respects except one. One has to remember that in those days a four-gun battery or howitzer battery was divided into two sections, the right section with two guns and the left section with the other. And the custom in those days was for the major battery commander to have the right section and the left section to be under the captain. We had a horrid captain. I don't know whether I should name him or not. And he, C.J. Heath, and he was a most trying person because at times he was quite reasonable, but at others he was perfectly horrid and was never grateful for anything we did, and a terribly difficult person to live with. And I remember on one occasion during one of our moves, I was in such a despair over terrible manner that I remember getting so depressed I went back and prayed about it to get over it, and I did. I decided to put up with it, and we had to. But it was quite decent at other times. That was one of the chief impressions I've got, and I had to live with him for 6 months and longer, much longer than that. In fact, till I was wounded. The other impression I have is of one or two quite good positions. There wasn't a bad one at La Cochere, if I remember right, and I can't be quite sure where the other ones were. And then we were moved to the right section was also moved about quite a lot, but I do remember that eventually, as we thought in preparation for the Somme, because it was only just before the outbreak, we moved to a splendid position in Beaumetz, near Beaumetz, and the guns were dug into an enormously deep bank, about 10 feet deep, by the side of a field, and we officers were living in a marvellous chateau which was filled with furniture. And in one of the places we were billeted in, I remember my delight at finding a newish violin which I was able to play. That was great, great joy to me, because I hadn't touched a violin for so long. But in this chateau we were absolutely in the lap of luxury, and it was only a few hundred yards from the gun position. But the digging we had to do to get into that gun position, 10 feet deep and about 40 feet in length, was simply gigantic. But it was very well, and we camouflaged it extremely well by putting wire netting over it, threaded with real grass, I think it was. And we had an awful job to manoeuvre the guns into it, because the caterpillars were useless. They could get them into the neighbourhood of the guns, but then we had to manhandle these enormous monsters, I forget what they weighed, several tons, we had to push them into their positions. But when they were very well concealed, so much so that one day we went to the battery to find that it was occupied, that during the, it couldn't have been during the night, it must have been during the day, it was so well concealed that a man, a French farmer with his cow, walked straight into the net and both fell in. And we had a most appalling job getting this beastly cow out of the gun position. The man came out all right whole, but the cow, however, it was enormous fun. And in the end, the general, who happened to be there nearby, joined us, and we had... it was one of those delightful moments when we all burst out laughing. It was so comical. There are lots of comical episodes that were a great relief, really, under the tension that we were all obviously suffering from. That, I think, is the best tradition we have. And then just before the Somme, the place had been shelled a good bit and the chateau was damaged during the process, and just before the Somme we were moved yet again. I suppose some other new battery was given our beautiful position to occupy, and then we put right out in the open behind near a place called Engelbelma, and there was no time to dig. We had to put the guns just on the surface of the ground with our platforms laid. And the whole place was teeming with guns and howitzers. Just 100 yards behind us was a 15-inch howitzer, and another 100 yards in front of us was another 15-inch howitzer hidden in a wood. And all around, 9.2 howitzers, such as the War Memorial at Hyde Park represents permanently in stone, because they really were marvellous guns, although they were terribly cumbersome and moved about in three different sections, and each gun had to have three caterpillars to move it. Ours only needed one. And however, it was a beautifully designed gun and worked terribly as well as the 15-inch did badly. That was one position. And that was the final position from which we had to open the Battle of the Somme. And the bombardment, which took place for a whole week beforehand, with every gun on both sides firing tooth and nail. It was a terrible din going on. You would hardly hear yourself talk. And dangerous, but... rather exciting in some ways, except when it rained. And we had the most appalling thunderstorms and things like that, and all out in the open. And I remember on one occasion during the bombardment, there was a gigantic explosion because the 15-inch howitzer in front, only 100 yards in front of the battery, had blown up. And all the splinters and the earth came showering down on us in the battery. For some remarkable, miraculous reason, we escaped. But the marine detachment had some men killed and several maimed. And they at once came over and accused us of having done the damage. And we were terribly upset by that, because of course we didn't do the damage. After all, we were a howitzer, we weren't firing horizontally at them. It was awfully stupid of them. I'm afraid, poor things, they lost their heads. And I was put in charge of the Court of Inquiry, and I had to find out the cause of the thing. And I examined every possible thing I could. And eventually, I came to the conclusion that owing to the rain, they hadn't noticed, couldn't really have noticed, that the whole mounting had slithered back about 15 feet from its original position in front of at the edge of the wood, until a twig of a tree was just in the line of fire, and the sensitive fuse must have hit this twig and burst. Ruined one of the two guns, I suppose the one from which it was fired, and they had to get the bits and pieces of both guns to make one out of the two for the rest of the bombardment. That was one experience I remember. It was rather disastrous.
Did you feel very vulnerable in your gun battery?
Extremely vulnerable. Not that we were seen, but the... It was extremely dangerous because there was no protection whatever. We were at the bottom of a valley, and we couldn't dig because the rain was prohibitive to any digging. But Captain Heath, whom the Major sent up, to our great delight, I'm sorry to say, to be the observing officer for the bombardment, he was up in an OP, in trenches crammed with observation posts and infantry with their bayonets and all like that. And it was only within, I think, the second day of the bombardment, he phoned from the next door dugout to say that, observation post dugout, to say that our dugout, our observation post, had received a direct hit the day before, and he was peeking from the dugout next to it. That is the last we heard from the observation post for the whole of that bombardment. So we had to do the whole of the rest of it blind, by which I mean by calculation.
Yes, the normal system would have been to have had signals feeding back from the...
Yes.
Could you explain how it worked?
Yes, the normal system was in the days before wireless was invented, and we had to do the whole thing by telephone lines, and you can imagine the confusion of lines in the trenches, because we tried to put them in the trenches for protection, some trenches there may have been 12 or 15 or even 20 lines all mixed up, and you had to trace yours. Occasionally there may have been three colours, red, blue and yellow or something like that, and not always. And if a shell burst in a trench, which they, of course, thousands did, they burst all the lines, and there's complete confusion, mud and lines and debris everywhere. The signalers, who were marvellous in our battery, had a terrible job to find our bits and pieces and to join them together again. So it shows how hopeless it was in the bombardment of the Somme in those 7 days beforehand, because the Germans responded immediately. They knew exactly what was going to happen. They also had every gun opposite ours, and they shelled the place to blazes. Of course, nobody had any communications after that. So the telephone system was a complete failure. Thank goodness we now have radio and things like that. Makes all the difference.
Was there much danger from your own guns behind you, the batteries of guns behind you, if shells fell short? Did it often happen that they would fall on your own side, as it were?
Well, there was more danger of that from the guns with their flatter trajectories than there was from howitzers. There was practically no danger from howitzer. In fact, it was a howitzer that gave me my gun deafness in my left ear, because I was coming back from an OP by night on the Somme, and it was a very dark night, pitch dark, and I couldn't see a thing except the occasional flash of a gun or a shell burst. And I was groping my way to try and find the battery position, because my relief had taken over from me. And to my horror, a 9.2 howitzer went bang straight off in my left ear. And then I discovered I couldn't see it. It was only about 10 yards away. And that deafened the ear permanently. More or less, but it's got worse in recent years. But I managed to live through the army with it. The rest of the army, my army experience with it. And that was the sort of thing that might have happened from a howitzer. On the other hand, there was a moment in the Somme battle when I was sent up to infantry brigade headquarters, because I had to be with the infantry in the front line to liaise, on that occasion, to liaise between the infantry requirements and the battery. And if, for instance, the infantry was suddenly worried by a Minenwerfer, I had to jump to the telephone at once and phone the battery and shoot them up on the Minenwerfer. And on one occasion, when I was with them, I was ordered to go from my observation post to the infantry brigade headquarters. And I went to that infantry brigade headquarters, and I had to explain how it was that our own shells had been shelling our own infantry. And it was a rather happy issue out of the affliction, in that although the shells came from a 60-pound gun, an excellent gun, but as you can imagine, it was a flat trajectory gun, and it fired shrapnel. Shrapnel is often misunderstood, but the original shrapnel was a shell that fired in the air by a time setting, and it was calculated to fire about to burst about 15 yards above the heads of troops, so that the hundreds of bullets that came from the inside of the shell covered a large area and was supposed to be devastating to the personnel concerned. The 60-pounders had these shells, and what happened was they had to fire at rather close range, and the shells themselves, whereas they skimmed the surface of the infantry, fortunately, it was the caps that, as they came off the nose of the shell, fell to the earth, and the infantry, poor things, thought it was that they were being shot up to the shell, but they weren't. So I had to explain that to them. And then after that, everything went happily. And I was even asked to dinner at the brigade headquarters, and the infantry brigadier with all sorts of terrible din from machine guns and shells bursting all around, insisted on having an old-fashioned mess dinner promptly at 7 o'clock, whatever it was. And we had a large table in this dugout, and the wine was brought out around in decanters. I shall never forget that, but it was rather nice, because it all helped to raise the morale of the friends, but I don't think it could have lasted very long.
And you had a proper meal, did you?
Proper
in this
meal, which was a great joy. Otherwise, we had very often to cook our own meals. And I still got my little, in that cupboard over there, I've got my little, I think it's a little mess, a little bivy tin that I had. It was a tiny wee saucepan with a lid, and inside the saucepan was the methylated spirit lamp. And what I found was absolutely marvellous at an observation post was to have a tin of bully beef, which we often had, and fry it on this little stove. It was most delicious. And that was the kind of thing we often had to do, fend for ourselves.
Perhaps I could now ask you about the Somme battle.
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind recounting your experiences. For instance, the beginning of the battle. Were you told that this was going to be, were you fully informed of the nature of
it? We knew, I should think about a month beforehand, it was so obvious that a push of some kind was being planned, because guns were being massed all over the place and that kind of thing. And nobody, of course, knew the date until very near the time. And then we knew that there was to be a 7-day bombardment, and that the 0 day, as it was called, would be July the 1st. And that we did know that beforehand, and so that was a great help in some ways. But what's your question again? Did we know about the...
You were told that this big push was on.
The big push was on. Yes, we knew that. And we didn't know quite what was involved. But, of course, a very great deal was involved. For instance, we, having done our bombardment from that terrible position where we were drowned out almost in Nankin-Belma, then we were moved back to Elbe again, And our first position after that, at the high, in July, I think it was, at the middle of the battle, was just in a garden, just in front of Albert, a beautiful garden, a chateau, and we had all four guns there. And I was section commander, in command of the right-hand gun with number one original, and there's another subaltern, the section commander, and the other two in the left section. The major remained in our little billet in the ruins of a house nearby, in the basement, and he came to the better position to do most of the gunnery there, as I said before, while we were up in the fort observation post doing OP observation work. And then after that, it was a very difficult period. Now, the one thing I shall never forget about that was my first experience, really, of dead bodies. And to my horror, it was hot weather then. The first day at Albert that I had to go to the observation post, fortunately, a marvellous officer who was later killed, a young subaltern, a regular subaltern, Preddy, who was obviously destined to high rank in the army, a splendid chap. He and I went up to observe, and we literally couldn't walk along the trenches without, unfortunately, treading on dead bodies, German and British, and the stench on those hot summer days and the flies was simply appalling. That was one of the most miserable memories that I have of the Somme. It was pathetic, really. But we had to not to mind, and eventually one just got over it and thought nothing of it. And there were dead bodies all around, all over the place, and we couldn't help it. We were alive, and that's what mattered. And being alive, we had jolly well had to get on with it, and that's exactly what we did. And,
is that right, that you did really get inured to this, that you could...
I don't think I really got inured to that until that particular day, which was my first experience of seeing dead bodies in battle, which I can never forget, unfortunately.
What was the general scene like when you went out that day?
Well, when I went up that day, after that experience, we managed to get into trenches that weren't quite so damaged and found our way up to the observation post. I can't remember whether it was on that occasion or on another one, but on one occasion from that position, we were told that we had to find an observation post to fire on Pozières. And we searched all over the place and we couldn't find anywhere to see Pozières. And so we crawled along the front line trench and saw some infantry, and we said to them, it was only about 100 yards from, I don't think much more than 100 yards from Pozières itself. Is there anywhere from here that we could see Pozières? And they said, yes. If you walk along the trench about another 100 yards, you'll find there's the remains of a German observation post sticking up above the ground. You can see Pozières from that. So we went to this thing, and we actually saw Pozières, the ruins of it, from that observation post. We carried out our chute, and on our way back, there was a terrific bit, of course, a lot of shelling going on all around. And on our way back, we had to duck because of a terrific bang just over our heads. And we looked up and couldn't see anything. And we could hardly believe our eyes when we looked round and saw the remains of a plank. Evidently, a night patrol had put a plank of wood over the surface of the ground, so that they didn't have to walk into shell holes and they could cross the trench rather easily. There's a white tape there to show that that was the route they took. And a 5.9 shell, which had a very sensitive impact fuse, had burst right in the middle of this plank over our heads, And we were hardly aware of it because all that we knew was that the plank was falling down on our shoulders. Of course, the bang was terrific. So we were saved by that plank. And that was constantly happening on the Somme. Do you want any other experiences?
As much as you can remember, please.
Well, it's difficult to remember all of them. But I remember at one observation post, it was a very clear summer day, and there was rather a lull in the battle, so I thought this is a splendid opportunity to fry my bully beef. And I was happily frying my bully beef away when, to my horror, I heard the swish of a plane coming right over my head, machine gunning me, because I was very visible standing up in this trench. And however, they didn't hit, so all was well. Another occasion was when I was sent out to observe on a farm. There were two farms which were terribly troublesome. One was La Louvier, and the other was one was Mouquet Farm, which was halfway, I think, between Pozières and Thiepval. And it was an awfully difficult place to find because it was rather low down in a valley. But it was a hive of iniquity and a terrible source of trouble to the infantry. They had tried time without number to capture this wretched Mouquet Farm, and they couldn't do it. They were decimated every time they went. So finally it was decided to blow the place to hell. And I had to do observation officer. And I went up and got into the front line with all the banners fixed and all like that, ready to go over. And they had an attack only that morning, which had failed lamentably. And that's why I was sent for. And I asked the infantry, where is Mouquet Farm? And they said, oh, just over there, but you can't see it from here. So I said, well, where can I see it from? And they said, well, you see, between us and Mouquet Farm is that little ridge over there, just the other side of a mini valley, and you might be able to see it from there. So I said to my signaller, come on, that's the only thing we'll have to do it. There's a terrific amount of shelling going on, mostly shrapnel, and then there came a lull, so he said, now's the time. And so we decided to go. We crouched down as low to the ground as we could, he carrying his telephone line and telephone, and we rushed along and dived down into a valley, the little wee valley between the front line and this little valley in front of No Man's Land, from which we were supposed to be able to see Mouquet Farm. And the valley was filled with dead and lying and dying who had failed in their assault that morning. It was pathetic. And we'd hardly got there before our line was broken, so it was no good anyway. We did our best. I'm not quite sure whether we got it. I think we did get a few rounds off. I remember seeing Mouquet Farm, so we must have got a few rounds off and then decided that was enough and we couldn't go on anymore.